Hello, my name is Joseph Cadigan, and you're listening to Midwest Screamo, a podcast where I interview members of the Midwestern Scrams, hardcore, and punk community. Today I'm joined by Drew, the vocalist from Prevention. Prevention is a straight-edge hardcore band out of Springfield, Illinois. Their most recent release, What Do You Say No To, dropped this summer. Drew, how's it going?
Good. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing great. So just to get started, I wanted to ask, what bands from the Midwest scene have you been listening to lately?
Well, if I had to pick like a few, I would say probably there's this band called Barossa that's like mm-hmm. from Decatur, which is like not far from Springfield, but like 40 minutes, and also like Chicago. They're kind of from all over Illinois, Chicago, Peoria, but they're really nice guys and they're really cool. Kind of like a beatdown band, and I don't typically like, that's not usually like my wheelhouse, mm-hmm. but they like play so well and have like such good energy live, and like very, very nice, cool guys. Direct Measure from St. Louis, we just put out like a new EP like a couple days ago, I want to say. That's really good.
Yeah, I think, and I saw a couple friends post about that.
they're a great band, highly recommend. And probably Big Laugh from Milwaukee. Nice. And one more, I'm gonna do four. Side Eye from Springfield, Missouri.
Classic. Also.
Yeah. So all those are, I think, really great bands.
Nice. Yeah, I love to hear it. So let's get started with some questions about the new release. The very first thing you hear in the new release is like this wind kind of like rumbling sound. And that really caught my attention because like it's also the outro on the last song. So I was wondering, like, what is that sound and why do you choose to include it on the record?
It was just like some kind of effects thing that our drummer came up with. We were kind of just testing out like a bunch of different things, not necessarily for like the intro, but actually just like with recording. Our first EP was like recorded by somebody else.
Mario,
friend,
right?
Yeah, our friend, yeah. Mario. And yeah. This one was recorded kind of by us and mastered by our friend Brandon. So mm-hmm. we kind of like feel like BJ was our drummer at the time was doing the recording, and I think he was mm-hmm. kind of just like wanting to test some stuff out. And I think we all really liked the cool little intro noise.
So, sick, yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Just some crazy manipulated sounds, I'm assuming then.
Yeah, I think he just like layered some like weird guitar, or like I think he had like a little keyboard that he bought, like a really like nice keyboard, but you know, it was like this like little thing, and he like I think kind of like played it and kind of like manipulated it, and
cool. So most of your focus in the writing process, I'm assuming, is lyrics, because you just do vocals for the band, right?
Yes, I am totally off any instruments on this band.
So. You do play other instruments though, right? What other instruments do you play?
Yeah, I play guitar. Mm-hmm. That's it. I started off playing drums in like my first band, but gotcha. I never could get to the level that I wanted to.
Drums are fucking hard.
They're hard. Yeah. I was like, I feel like I couldn't get like that, the DB down. That's really what it is. I couldn't figure out the life of me had a DB. And I feel like that's stupid because that's like everybody. I feel like tons of people can DB. So.
Hey, you know, everybody's got different talents. And, you know, I think your lyrics are really fucking great. What's your lyric writing process look like?
So I'm like a big like notes guy on my phone, so I always have like little snippets that I like will think of as I'm like going around, and I'll kind of like incorporate that into like writing. But when I'm like writing, I'll just kind of sit and listen to it mm-hmm. over and over and over again until something kind of takes form. There's like Prevention's like the fourth band that I've done vocals for, mm-hmm. and I think it's the only one that I've like really taken the lyric writing process seriously. But I try to really go back and like revise and revise and revise and revise. You know, it's never perfect, but I think to I think that revision is key.
Yeah. So when you're writing, you listen to the song over and over. Do you find like that you're coming up with like whole verses at a time, or does it tend to be more like fragmented, like individual lines?
Yeah, no, I'm a fragment guy. I'm writing like little bits. Like I think, especially for the EP, I was trying really hard not to rush it because there was literally no rush. We were writing this during like the world being gone. I would just write like a little bit, leave it for like a day, come back the next day or 2 days later and like try to keep going and kind of just get it all figured out, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Nice. I had a question about a specific lyric in the title track, actually. What specifically inspired the lyric "Movements taking presence in our hearts, calling for genocide"?
I feel like it sounds so silly when you read it out.
I don't think it does. I mean, it might sound silly when I read it like that, but when you're fucking screaming it, it sounds cool as hell.
Thank you. I think that line, and also I think generally speaking about like a song, it's not really like necessarily a straight edge song, more so just like about, I think in a capitalist world, I think so much of identity is formed around consumption and what people do. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes within that framework, it's important to think about what you don't do and what you do, like what you resist partaking in. And so I think in some contexts that can be like a straight edge message, but I think it's like a little bit more broad. And mm-hmm. so that line specifically, I think, was just about like, I think all world history is a racist history. But I think, you know, flat, like 1900s on, I think is like a very, I think you really get amped up. People, I think, because globalization is like more and more prevalent, mm-hmm. People are more and more mixed together. And I think you'll find people scapegoating on different races, ethnicities, mm-hmm. Types of people.
Yeah.
And so I think, especially in America, I feel like the last like few years, I think that America always has a troubling political situation, yeah, but yeah. I think that lately it seems like there is like a more of a prevalence with like very far right wing
mm-hmm.
Ideology. I think most mainstream political ideology in America can be pretty damaging and pretty racist and mm-hmm. You know, trouble causing, I guess.
Even the people who even the people who are presenting themselves as non-problematic,
right? Exactly. Yeah, but yeah. I think lately there's been this thing where like everybody's like, yes, we hate people, isn't that great of us? We're good, we're strong, and we're good.
What some people might refer to as a peak capitalism.
Sure. Yeah. It's like, I have this friend who talks about how, like, what does he say? He says like fascism is like the leaves of the plant, but like capitalism is like the root.
Mm-hmm.
So like, yeah, I mean, I feel like that's like kind of self-explanatory, but just like this idea that, I think, you know, more and more often you see like Middle Eastern people, like Latino people, and especially like during like the BLM conversations, like Black people too, like, and during coronavirus, like Chinese people, like Asian people generally, because people aren't like willing to differentiate, facing a lot of like very direct, overt, and often like violent racism. So, I think in the fact that it's so organized, I think you have very mainstream, very public, popular news sources that are able to just outright say like mask off fascist things, so, and racist things. And I think that that is kind of what that line is about.
Yeah, yeah. No, that totally makes sense. And, you know, that's something that's been obviously very present in all the songs Prevention has released, is your political background. And so it kind of had me wondering, like, when and how did your political education begin?
Yeah. I think I've just always kind of been somewhat cognizant of, like, it's a hard one to answer. I think like my mom, when I was growing up, was very like a hard party Democrat and like a feminist in the way that a hard party Democrat for age would be.
Yeah. Second wave stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is, I don't think, you know, that stuff is not without merit. Like, there's definitely a lot of like good things being said there. Just kind of missing all of the conversations about queerness and like right. intersections of race and stuff like that. But my mom, I think, was also like very like adamantly against like racism in like a surface level way. I mean, you know, like, I don't think that she's like I think my mom's a woman to her core, full of love. But I think, mm-hmm. you know, again, in the way that a party Democrat can be, opposed to, you know, she's not like trying to dismantle racism and, like that. and my dad, I think maybe less political, but would always like say shit like, you know, like, oh yeah, they definitely killed JFK. Like,
I was actually, I just watched Oliver Stone's JFK film a couple weeks ago, and crazy stuff.
Right. So I think like those two, I think combined, I think my dad made me like skeptical of power just by mm-hmm. saying things every once in a while. And my mom was a little bit more direct, I think, trying to like educate me to be like cognizant of like different people's struggles, I guess. And then I, you know, just like went to school, blah blah blah. And in college I was already like reformed. I think like punk and stuff like really makes you doesn't make you, but I think to a lot of people pushes you further and further left. In a lot of ways, I think kind of gave me language to like describe things that I had already kind of been feeling from a pretty young age. And I went to college and I had a Marxism class and a class about like global capital and like all these like there's this professor that we have here who's like a pretty good friend of mine now. His name's Richard Gunnelkowski, and he's like this like total like diamond in the like in the sand. Like, I feel like he's like teaches like these like very like radical political classes, and is like was in like punk bands and stuff, and is like vegan straight edge, and like, I don't know, like, I, to somebody like lives in a major city, that maybe doesn't sound like much of a deal, but like in Springfield, Illinois, that's like kind of a weird a weird find.
I'm from a small town, Indiana. I definitely understand that isolation almost that a lot of leftists out here feel. You talked about like taking classes on Marxism and stuff, but like what people, events, or movements do you think really like influenced your lyrics specifically?
It's interesting. I think it's difficult to isolate influences with things. When I was coming up, you know, I mean, I think we all kind of were, I mean, well, I don't know how old you are, but I feel like when I was coming up and kind of like becoming like a political, like minded person, there was like the Occupy Wall Street stuff was like really going off. And that was like the first protest I ever went to, was Occupy Wall Street here in town. And I think that's like a whole thing I don't think I really need to go into, but I think like that stuff, I think that was an interesting conversation. And I think a lot of the more contemporary protests that you see are maybe less focused on like a broad statement about class. I feel like Occupy Wall Street was pretty class-based, maybe not as well organized as it could have been, maybe not as blah, 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 blah. But like, I think the basis of having like a class conversation is like important. Mm-hmm. I think that, or like, I think affected me in ways. I think, I don't know. I've always kind of been interested in, when I was in school, I tended to gravitate towards like writing feminist papers and things like that.
What did you go to school for?
I have an English, I have a bachelor's degree in English. So
nice. I'm about to go back for a bachelor's in labor studies. So
that'll be very nice.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to it. So you kind of started with the Occupy stuff. You got some classic Zizek photos. And so you think like, I mean, obviously, I think class consciousness is a important theme in a lot of your songs that maybe some listeners aren't as familiar with, in terms of like the education that a lot of leftists receive now, especially like internet based education on leftist issues. So are you, when you talk about class consciousness, are you looking at that from like a Marxist perspective, like kind of orthodox Marxism, or, you know, are you thinking more broadly?
I think so. I think I'm pretty opposed to going too deep into like ideological terminology. I think people really, I think Marx was really, I mean, at the base was like a materialist, and I think wasn't as focused. The whole thing is that he would say that like the ideological is like informed by the material. So like to suggest that like we need to be reading, or I not that you're saying that at all, but I think for me, it's like, when I think of class consciousness, I think of understanding that we have like connections because of our like material conditions. I think focusing on like material conditions for people, like I think sometimes with like an identity politic, we can get a little bit removed from that. I don't think that there isn't room for those conversations at all. I think that they should also be had. But I think that like at the end of the day, we should also be having conversations about class, because like what will directly influence somebody's quality of life is conversations about like access to goods, conversations about, pay and like wages and things like that, and ownership of one's work. And I think that BLM has been really great about that. I think that like the BLM movements, I think were very like about really deconstructing every single aspect of the institutions that we have, which is like fantastic to see. I think in Springfield, maybe not so much. I think there was a lot of cop loving people that got up on stage in Springfield protests, unfortunately. But there were people who said some things that I think really did touch on that necessity of having conversations about race intersecting with class. Because I think, ultimately, I think sometimes when I, like, for instance, as a protest here, I would hear people talk about, it's all about, we need to, think more openly about people and be more accepting. And it's like, I guess, but, ultimately, everybody here is, just some person. It's not about what some guy personally thinks about different people. It's about those people's ability to provide for themselves and their families under an incredibly oppressive system. You know what I mean? It's I think just for me, I'm always just wanting to focus on how can we directly help people. And I don't have all the answers by any means. And I don't want to insert myself into conversations that aren't really my place at all. But yeah. I think that BLM was doing a really, really fantastic job generally. I mean, obviously, because it's not like an organization, it's more like this like broad thing. I think that it's hard to be like, they're doing this or they're doing that. We're talking about basically a huge segment of the country operating independently. But I think that there were real conversations being had about, mm-hmm. about how class intersects with race. And I think about how people's conditions, like ultimately, like people should be able to like live and be happy and provide for themselves and their families without like threat of like violence or poverty.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and it seems to me like, you know, a lot of this stems from like this truly uniquely United States based individualism, you know, this idea that like we're able to exist completely independently of other people. And so therefore like no issues are systemic. They're all based in like how a person thinks when like that is just obviously not the case.
Sure. Well, so, and I think that that's a pretty direct tactic by right wing think tanks. To disrupt the class conversations and disrupt you know anybody's conversation, like disrupt Black people from talking, disrupt women from talking, people from talking.
I mean it's a true embarrassment. But moving on, I just if you feel comfortable talking about it, obviously being edge, straight edge is pretty important to the band. When did you go edge and why?
I think I was 16, I want to say. I was 16. I went vegan and straight edge pretty close to each other. I'm 26 now, so like 10 years in. I think it's important within the context of the band because I think it's kind of what brought us together initially in a sense. And I think that, I don't know. I feel like I have a lot to say about like straight edge culture. I think some of it's like not as productive as it could be.
I want to hear details. I think you should go into it.
Well, I think anytime that you see an uptick in straight edge bands, which I think you have seen in recent years, I think that, I think a lot of it, the conversations being had stem from creating this sort of victim complex. You see a lot of kids talking about, at the core of it, talking about like social isolation because of their lack of drug use, which I think like as a literal teenager makes sense. I think that when you see adults talking about that, I think it's a little
more questionable.
It's a little questionable. I think my life is perfectly fine. I think I don't think anybody gives a fuck if I do drugs or not. Apart from occasionally maybe like my boss will like be like, oh yeah, that's right, you don't drink. And it's like, oh my gosh, I'm so oppressed. Like what a horrible thing. Like, you know. So and I think straight edge could easily be something that could be, you know, weaponized to like really break apart and attack drug culture.
Give a real superiority complex sometimes.
Right. Well, and I think that like drug culture isn't necessarily like under capitalism or current state. I don't think it's good. I don't think it's healthy. I think that people can use drugs healthily, but I just don't think, and I think people do currently, but I just don't think that that's the current state for everybody.
Right.
And I think that like having, you know, I want to imagine a world in which straight edge kids are like organizing like help and assistance for like people who have like issue, like a drug use issues, you know. But instead I feel like it's kind of like we hate those junkies, you know what I mean? And that's unfortunate because I think that whether or not one uses drugs or is straight edge or whatever has a lot more to do with I think a lot of straight edge rhetoric is about like, my choice. This is my choice. I don't really believe in choice. I think that I think people don't really have free will. I think that people are, I think that your world and your environment crafts pretty heavily and influences to an extent that it is inescapable, your reality. So now that doesn't say that one situation must necessarily result in a particular person or a particular outcome, but you know, I think it would be very insincere for me as a person who grew up in like a pretty middle class household with like not much drug use present at all, I think, and who was able to like pretty openly and safely experiment with like mild drug use when I was like a very young teenager, I think that it would be very insincere for me to try to act like I understand what somebody who maybe is like addicted to something would go through. I think it'd be very insincere to try to attack somebody because of their illness.
Yeah. And that's, you know, I think that's an important distinction to make, that like going edge isn't a condemnation of other people's behaviors. It's about like taking, like, knowing what's healthy for your mind and your body, and understanding that that's different for everyone. Right. And like, I think there's a interesting culture of like you said, promoting these victim complexes of, it seems like a lot of, like you said, younger people who tend to fall for this kind of idea that like, well, since I don't do what everyone, quote unquote, everyone else is doing, I am somehow being left out of things. It's right. Just really interesting. Yeah. I hadn't really thought about it through that lens before.
Yeah. And I don't want to come off as like condescending to anybody. I think that I think that hardcore is about expression. If that's your truth and that's your reality, then you should express it.
Yeah.
But I think sometimes, I think Strange is a good example, but I think more broadly, I think hardcore and generally speaking, media and art fall into this just everywhere. But I think a lot of times, you know, there's a lot of straight edge bands and a lot of them have songs talking about being straight edge, which is good and fine. And I think that's a beautiful thing. And I love a lot of those bands. I'm wearing a Dare shirt, right? Sweatshirt right now. Like, you know, don't get it twisted. I'm about it. But like, I think that, you know, I just think that there could be more done, and I'm not doing anything any better. You know, I'm just some guy. I like run shows and go to work. Like, I don't like, you know, whatever, but I think, it would be nice, I think, to imagine conversations that are more about like love and acceptance. Cause to me, that's like what hardcore is. It's like love and acceptance, like in a radical context, like a radical love and acceptance, especially, Springfield. When I was younger, the guy who kind of ran the venue was like this like very like religious straight edge guy. And he, I think, really had this like, he was like this like quasi father figure for like countless people, like, and had this like extreme and like radical love and acceptance and grace. And I'm not religious at all, but I think that when I think about what I want hardcore to be, I think it's Kevin from Springfield. You know, I want it to be big dude with beard who is like happy to see everybody and will talk to everybody and is like welcoming and cares for everybody. Like, and I think sometimes straight edge can maybe not be that for everybody. And that's, and you know, whatever, man, it's your band, your life, you know, I don't give a fuck like what you do. That's just like, for me, for prevention, I want to be not judgmental or condemning of anybody.
When I saw y'all perform at the Shred, that was 2019, I think. You could definitely feel that. Like, it was a comfortable space, and like the people who were there were excited to be there. And like, just seeing, like, I remember after you guys finished your set, seeing you guys talk to the crowd and like be involved with the people who came out there to see you was really nice. It was a really fun show.
Good. Oh, wait. So were you at is that the one like PJ set up?
Yeah.
That's cool. I for some reason didn't know that you were at that. Oh, that's cool. Awesome.
Yeah, it was a great time. And you know, I mean, that's kind of what got me into, like, I think I bought the Your Bad Habits cassette like probably last year sometime during COVID, for sure. But I remember just like going to classes and listening to that EP just like on a loop. I think who was it, the sample y'all have in the song about from the Nixon admin, Like that, like when I heard that section in the song, and for the listeners who don't know, it's about how the Nixon administration knowingly criminalized heroin and marijuana to intentionally discriminate against the Black community and the hippie community.
We knew we couldn't make it illegal to be either against the war or Black, but by getting the public to associate the hippies with marijuana and Blacks with heroin, and then criminalizing both heavily, we could disrupt those communities. We could arrest their leaders, raid their homes, break up their meetings, and vilify them night after night on the street. Did we know we were lying about the drugs? Of course we did.
Yeah. Which is like what that all is about. And that, again, is like looping back. Like, I think that's like, you know, to I would hate to fall in line with fucking Nixon on anything. God. So the idea of like condemning people like in the same way that Nixon did, like, I think you're just like playing into the trap, you know what I mean? So I think even the straight edge bands like talk about that stuff a lot. I can't imagine that they're like, I mean, obviously somebody is, but I can't imagine that even they are like that condemning of people in their own personal lives. I think it's more about this culture and this thing that we're doing together and like kind of like expressing yourself and being part of it. And so I get that. But I want to be as like calm and accepting as I can be of people. And I hope that it doesn't come off like as me like condemning straight edge at all either.
I don't think it does.
Because I love straight edge. I think there's something beautiful about going to a different town and like clicking hard. Like, I feel like I always connect the best with like straight edge people, like especially vegan straight edge people. I feel like so many instances of me being like immediately like good friends with them. Like, and that's great. I love that. That's like the coolest thing about hardcore and straight edge. And it's everything that we do is that like, oh, like I can meet this motherfucker from like hours away from me and like probably like maybe have a good time talking to them. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And speaking of traveling, I kind of want to hear about Prevention's touring history. Where have you guys played before? Where have you gone around?
So we've played Indiana a couple times, played Grand Rapids recently, played Chicago and Louisville, St. Louis like a bunch of times because we're like close enough we can just like play shows there sometimes, and Omaha. And we had a tour that was booked, we were on the tour 2020, March 2020. We were in Omaha and we had, I think, a Minneapolis, Milwaukee, and Indiana shows lined up, and they all canceled because of, you know, the whole thing.
Yeah.
So, but we managed to play Kansas City and Omaha. So that's really all we've done. We have like a thing that we're doing in November that isn't like announced yet. That is not nothing like crazy, but it'll be nice. And we're playing Promcore now.
Oh shit, really?
So yeah
it's with Onlove is playing that too, right?
Yeah, there's like a lot of, I feel like FS is like a lot of the like kind of more I really like small to mid-tier bands. That's like my thing. I'm not super into huge bands necessarily. I mean, not like it really matters, but like I feel like I tend to be like, oh, like this demo is fucking sick, like this, like this first EP is like great, like, you know. So like I'm love and like of course I'm like blank on every other band playing, but there's like a bunch of bands from that fest that I'm like stoked on.
Yeah,
and it'll be great to see them.
Yeah, that's sick. Where's that fest again?
In Tulsa. Oh, Zulu and Scowl are playing, which I guess are two kind of bigger bands, but they're both from like California, I think. And Zulu is like the best band. Like, I don't know if you listen to it, but that band is like, sounds like I was like, when I was younger, I really was like, I was really a power balance guy. That was like kind of my thing. And like that band is like everything that like 16, 17 year old Drew would have been like hooked on. Like, so.
Yeah. Yeah. That's sick. I'm so glad you guys get to play that. It'll be really cool. I'm excited to hear about it. What's like, obviously touring got cut off in March of 2020, but, you guys have been able to come back to play some shows since then. And, I was just wondering, like, what's your favorite show that the band has played?
We played, the Direct Measure, which might have been at the time Brute Force music video recording the music video recording show, and that was a really, really good show. There was I think Direct Measure is like full of guys who like are really nice and I think really good at making connections and really good at like playing a really good set, and I think that they really organized their scene well for that show. I think there was a really, really good turnout. And the spot that they played in was like the perfect size. Like it wasn't very big at all. Like it was like a good size room, but it wasn't like huge by any means. And so like, and also St. Louis, like, I feel like it's not like the hardest moshing scene I've ever seen, but they definitely go pretty good, you know? So it was good to, when they do stuff like that, it like really goes off and it really goes off well. And like, it was very nice for them to ask us to play that. And we had a great time and that was a really, really good show. But honestly, like since the pandemic has like ended, I've like loved every show that we played. Like we played the tunnel, we played a tunnel show here, which is like a show we do in this like bike tunnel. And that was like our first show back. And that was a really, really good show too. And actually Direct Measure played that too. So
sick. How have shows been different like for the band post quarantine? Obviously besides like the new restrictions and such.
So I think locally for right now, there's a good amount of people who I think are like really down to come out to shows. I think Springfield, like every city kind of ebbs and flows with like the amount of people that come out. But I think in Springfield and other cities, the size of Springfield, I think it really shows more. Like, I imagine like Boston, New York, Chicago maybe have like a more consistent, like, there's always going to be a lot of people at a show. But lately it's been pretty good here. We did that like End It Shackled show. Which is really great. Like honestly, that show was great too. Like every band that was on that was like awesome. It was like that Barossa band I was talking about, and Bitter Truth from Grand Rapids, and it Shackled, and and it's so good live. Anyways, but like just like a good turnout, I think, for everything, and it's great. It's great to see people like taking an interest. I think a lot of people. I think we all take things for granted, I think. And I think when we were gone, when everybody was gone for a year and a half, I think everybody was like, fuck, I need to do everything that I have not been doing. And I think a lot of shows have been really good. Every show that I've played so far has been good, and shows that I've been to have been good. And I think everywhere people are showing out maybe in ways that they wouldn't have before. Also like there's a thing where I think a lot of like TikTok age like kids are like getting into hardcore. And I see like big dudes who like wear big like tough hardcore shirts will be like all like wait till they get fucking moshed on by some like 300-pound guy. It's like, okay, whatever guy, like I don't know, like I think it's fucking sick that like some 14, 15, 16 year old like discovered hardcore and like looks like a fucking like mall goth from like, I think that's sick. I'm all for that. Like because I started going to shows when I was like 14 too. And you like don't know what you like and you maybe aren't like the cool guy at the show yet, but like eventually like those kids are awesome. I went to the show in Peoria like a month ago, and like half the people there were these like super like emo looking like TikTok kids.
Hell
like,
yeah.
Like scene kids. And they were all like smoking. I was like, there's no way an 80 year old of them to be smoking. Like, I love that shit. Like, it like takes me back. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
So it's awesome to see like, and also they like knew the bands that were playing, like mm-hmm. bands from like Colorado, they like knew mm-hmm. and like were like singing. Like, it was awesome. This is the coolest thing ever. Like, I think all that internet shit is kind of sucks sometimes, but mm-hmm. like the fact that it maybe brings some new people out.
Oh yeah. Awesome. Yeah. Pros and cons.
Yeah.
I think, these kids really are the future, and like, we gotta make sure we leave behind a scene that's good for them. And,
absolutely. I would much rather play and be at a show with a bunch of like teenagers who like barely know how to push mosh than a bunch of like dudes who like hate their community. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I think
700 Harms Way lookalikes.
Yeah. And obviously, like, I love guys like that too. Like,
oh,
I
yeah,
think,
yeah.
I think it's all, everybody's got a place. You know, you just got to mm-hmm. recognize that everybody has a place. Everybody can fit in. Like, there's no need to be like, those people can't come or these people can't come. Like,
yeah,
there's room for the big motherfuckers, the room for like the tiny little goth kids. I don't care. Like, everybody's welcome, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, I'm going to be honest, like one of the first shows I was back at, oh gosh, it was over the summer at some point. I saw it. They were a one show type band, called Liminal. They're the shred house band. They fucking ripped. I think they have, music out on Bandcamp. But the pit for that show was fucking insane, and I got my shit rocked by like someone probably half my size.
And that's sick. I love that.
It was a great experience. I loved it.
Yeah, I saw a video that like the guys from, I don't know if it's getting too off the rails, but I saw this video that these guys, the guys from Twin Tunes up in Minneapolis, like mm-hmm. posted, and it was just like fucking packed. Like building that they were playing in, and like it was just a sea of like teenage push mosh, and I was like, that is the kind of show I wanted to like, yeah, like you know, yeah, that is awesome, that is so sick. Yeah.
Just people who are into it for the music and for the experience of like being together.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Awesome.
Yeah, like, yeah, it's fucking great.
I really like the band Barossa I was talking about. Mm-hmm. I really like those guys. And I think they're kind of more on the big guy side of things.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very funny recently. Again, I don't know if I'm going to go off the rails here, but I saw, I went to see them play in Peoria, and mm-hmm. they only had shirt sizes from XL to 3X. And I was like, I fucking love that. Like, I bought an XL shirt. There's no way I can like wear that.
Like, swimming in the shirt like, a little bit.
Yeah, that'd be like a dress on me. No way.
Hey, you know, I think it takes us back to the scene days a little bit, just wearing the shirt that goes down to your fucking knees and like.
Yeah. No, it's awesome. I love that. Awesome. I love people doing like weird stuff. I'm here for it. You know.
So, what shows do y'all have coming up that you're playing?
We have the show on the 20th in Springfield, the Dumb Records. That's like it's kind of a lot of bands. It's Prevention,
mm-hmm.
Direct Measure, Gates to Hell from Louisville, Constraint from Louisville, Flashback from Canada, somewhere in Canada, I'm not really sure. And then Discourage from California. So
pretty a big lot bill.
Of them. It's a big bill. You know, if anybody lives anywhere near that, feel free to come. Because, it's a big bill. You know what I mean? So.
Yeah, and shows at Dumb Records are fucking great. I think I saw, the Nasty Boys show there.
yeah, that was an interesting one.
For the listeners who don't know, the Nasty Boys, I don't know if they're still doing stuff or not, but they were a two-piece like a polka punk band.
It was weird. Privacy had a very distinct sound. Like, I think it was cool. You know, you don't mm-hmm. see a lot of people who can make like a distinct sounding punk mm-hmm. band necessarily.
But they definitely did. Yeah. They I think what I remember the most from that show is these the two dudes in the band were wearing like pink bathrobes at the beginning of the set, and by the end of the set they had stripped down to hot pink Speedos, and they were sweaty as fuck because they were moving the entire show. The vocalist had like a wireless like earpiece mic. Like, I'd never seen anybody perform with that before. And he was just like going all around the venue. And then at some point he went outside, like onto the street, ass cheeks up against the window, and just like mooned the entire venue. And you know, it was unforgettable.
Yeah. No, they definitely, I haven't heard from those guys in a while. But they, I think we're from like Milwaukee. So
yeah. Also Midwest.
Yeah.
That was a great show. I'm pretty sure they gave everybody hugs at the end of the set, and I just remember feeling like greasy after that, but in like the best way. It was beautiful. It was love, you know.
Yeah, and they were very nice. Yeah. I feel like they weren't like super punk guys, you know what I mean? Like they were just kind of like normal nice guys. Yeah. It was very interesting. Like, really good. You know, some bands, it's like their performance, like they're like really good performers. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that band more is like pretty, like, you know what I mean?
They put on a show.
Yeah. Like,
yeah. No, that was a great show. Any show at Dumb Records, people should definitely go to. I'm glad y'all have a stacked bill coming up. Is that it? Anything? I mean, you got Promcore coming up.
Promcore. I think that's maybe it for professional. I said we have like some dates in November. We're doing like Iowa City, or like Quad Cities, Iowa City, somewhere. Mm-hmm. and Kansas City, Tulsa again. So hopefully people remember us. Fingers crossed. Springfield, Missouri, and then I think Chicago.
Nice.
So, but we'll see. I always have a hard time getting a show in Chicago.
Oh yeah,
it's a tricky city. I think when you get in those big cities, I think people struggle finding venues. Mm-hmm. I think is the thing, because there's not. It's you know, there's a lot going on. I feel like those venues fill up. So, but hopefully we'll be playing in Chicago, because I got some friends up there. And it's a nice city. So,
well, y'all heard the dates on Midwest Screamo first November shows coming up for Prevention. Yeah, well, I'm excited. I hope I can make it out to one sometime soon. Before we wrap up here, is there anything you want to say to the listeners? Anything, parting words of advice?
No, you know, I would say just remember that I think hardcore is about love, and mm-hmm. and please love the people who are around you. I think anything at the last year and a half, I hope all your beefs were cleared over COVID. I hope everything, let's just wash the slate clean. Yeah. All the beefs are cleared. Everybody's friends now again, and let's just have a good time. And hopefully, we can keep doing shows and not have to go back into the fucking vault.
Yeah. Radical love is the only path forward, baby. Well, thank you so much for talking with me today, Drew. It's been a great time. I've loved having you on. And I'll talk to you again soon.
Yes. Thank you for having me.